welcome to the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Podcast. My name is Josh Lloyd, and you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at @RedRock_BBall, Facebook.com/RedRockBasketball. Yeah, email is RedRockFantasyBasketball@gmail.com, and there is also the YouTube channel, which you can find in the links on my Twitter bio or on the website. Make sure you're heading across and looking at those videos and subscribing to that content as well. Back today for another In the Season in Review podcast. Today we're going to be talking about the Brooklyn Nets. The city I live in is beautiful Brooklyn. The O, the O, K. Brooklyn. Was there a more boring team in the NBA? Well, at least for the start of the season. Until we had the Brook Lopez show down the stretch, but Brooklyn was just painful to watch. I know the Lakers were really, really poor to watch. I know the Knicks were disgusting. But Brooklyn, for a team who was good, and I use that term pretty loosely, they were not good. They were not good to watch. They were just insipid, uninspired. Lionel Hollins was making me question if he was ever a good coach with some of the moves that he made and some of the press conferences and the comments that he made. It was just, I think, more the bleakness of that whole situation, the bleakness of their uniforms, the bleakness of their arena, the poor sound, the bleakness of their future. It all contributed into a team where you just go, oh, this is not good. This is not something I want to be a part of. This is not something I want to watch. With really minimal young up-and-coming talent, the team just, it was just, whenever I was in a situation where I was watching a Brooklyn game, it was like, oh, this is painful. There is nothing good happening here. But then we saw Brook Lopez go pretty much bonkers down the stretch and restore a little bit of hope for the franchise, a little bit. Not completely, though. Doesn't rescue them and make them a title contender or anything like that. We imagine there's going to be big changes in Brooklyn, but we've heard there's going to be big changes for a long time, and there hasn't been. It's hard to move these contracts that they've got. No one wants to take guys like Joe Johnson or Darren Williams. People just don't want to take on $50 million of a player who's not anything basically at the moment. We'll start with talking about Darren Williams. I thought he was in a pretty good position to have a decent season. He had an okay season, the 74th ranked head-to-head player, 77th per game, worse in roto leagues, and he was a bit better down the stretch, the 58th guy in the last month, 68th post-All-Star break. But Darren Williams is the guy that we thought was the best point guard in the league 4 or 5 years ago. 13 points, 6.6 assists, 3.5 rebounds, 0.9 steals, 1.3 threes, a disgusting 39% from the field. This was a guy who was a 20-10 player not that long ago. He's not the same. Injuries have ravaged him. He did play 68 games, which is better than what we may have anticipated from him. But part of it is his drop-off in form. Part of it is injuries. But also, to me, a big part of it is the way that Lionel Hollins managed him during the season, playing him off the bench behind Jarrett Jack. As bad as Williams may be, he is clearly a better player than Jarrett Jack every single day of the week. I did not understand that move at all. And we saw Hollins do similarly stupid moves with Mason Plumlee playing ahead of Brook Lopez, which again made very little sense. Williams has still got 2 years left on his deal, and it's there two pretty expensive years, so it's going to be hard to move him. He's going to be paid $21 million next year, and he's got a player option for $22 million the following year, which there is no chance that he is declining. So for someone to take on $43 million of Darren Williams in a trade, they're going to have to be stupid, Sacramento, or they're going to just be in a not-care situation, Philadelphia. And I don't think Philadelphia, there's no chance of Philadelphia's doing that. So Brooklyn's probably going to be lumped with this horrible Darren Williams contract. And it wasn't necessarily a horrible contract when they signed him, because he was worthy of being a max player. He just has completely fallen in a hole. Does he get better next season? Well, there is a chance that he can get better than this. I don't think he necessarily returns to a top 50 player. But taking him inside the top 70, I reckon, is a pretty decent bet. When you head outside that top 50, there's not many point guards left. If you can get him around that range, I think that's a pretty decent sort of position for Darren Williams. I already touched on it in the tweets I sent out before this podcast that Williams clearly has the worst hair in the NBA, hands down. If you've got another person who you think is a challenger for that title, please let me know. But his hair is it's not great. Let's be honest, it's not good to look at, and it makes me dislike him as a player even further. But from a fantasy point of view, I am pretty objective. But that he is just brutal to watch with that head going around. It's definitely very high up in the punchable head list. Point guards, Jarrett Jack. He was good at times. 112th in per game value. That compares with Darren Williams at 77. So we talk about, you know, there was a lot of people saying, yeah, Jack should just be the starter permanently. He's just not that good. He's not that good a player. He did average 12 points, 4.7 assists, and 3 rebounds. But he doesn't do a huge amount. We're not expecting big numbers from him. Half a 3, 0.9 steals. And this is in 28 minutes a game. And he did play 80 games. He was durable. He was pathetic in Cleveland the season before. Really good in Golden State after that. But this is the role for him. It's a guy who plays 26 to 27 minutes off the bench, backing up the one, backing up the two. He never should be a leading point guard for a team in the NBA at this stage in his career. He's not going to get better than this. You know, we look at his per game at 112th. That's a bit misleading, I think. Post All-Star break, the 185th ranked player. I think that's more realistic of where we expect him to be, because that 112th is influenced by all that time that Lionel Hollins gave him as a starter, which, as I said before, was ludicrous. Jack should not be drafted, I don't think, in 10 or 12. Obviously, if something changes and Williams is gone or Joe Johnson's gone and he's in for a 30 to 33 minute role, that's a lot different for Jack. But if he's going to be in this six-man first guard off the bench sort of position, I don't think that there's any need to be looking at him for 10 or 12 team leagues. Even dynasty leagues, his value is going to continue to either stay stagnant or get worse. And for me, he's probably a guy, even though, you know, post All-Star 185, I would say 14 team leagues is where you look at Jarrett Jack. And he could easily give you a top 120 season, but to think he's going to pop himself into the top 100, there'd have to be a few things go wrong in Brooklyn for that to be the case. He's still signed. He's signed for as long as Darren Williams. He's got another 2 years left. It's obviously much cheaper, $6 million per year, which is a lot more palatable for the Nets. But I don't see him ever being a guy where he's going to be a fantasy must-own for standard leagues. Once again, I must apologize for my voice. It is sounding worse and worse. Hopefully over the weekend, I've got 3 days off from work. I won't have to talk all day. It will recover slightly. So I do apologize for this, the gravelly nature of my speaking. The other point guard on this roster is Darius Morris. He showed us basically nothing, 451st per game. And when we're talking guys, you know, outside the top 450, we're talking about guys who don't have much of an impact. He played just 8 minutes a game, 2 points, 1.3 assists. He is not that old. He's relatively young, relatively new to the game, but I don't imagine there's much of a future for Darius Morris. So I don't think he's looking to be a breakout player anytime soon. A player who could be a breakout player is Bojan Bogdanović, the 26-year-old rookie. Came over from Europe. He played 78 games, 24 minutes a game. The numbers aren't all that exciting on the surface. 9 points, 1.2 threes, not a lot else. 2.7 rebounds, less than an assist, less than half a steal. But 45% shooting, 82 from the line. They're pretty solid numbers. He ranked in a per-game basis for head-to-head, 272. But down the stretch, he really came on. In the last month, the 137th ranked player. And I reckon he's going to be a bit of a surprise guy for next, well, maybe not a surprise, but a player that for 12 team leagues after the first month of the season, I think he'll be a guy who's a must-own. So I wouldn't be hesitant in taking him in the last round of drafts. I actually had a question come from Emre Durmaz on Facebook about Bogdanović. He says, Bogdanović could get some great minutes next year, but given his talent, how will the 26-year-old fare as a dynasty player? He said, I just traded Klay Anthony Early for him. I like Early, but I think that's a win in the short term for you. Bogdanović will have a better run in the next 3 years than I think Klay Anthony Early will. Obviously, Bogdanović is that, you know, four or five years older than what Early is, but I think for next year, the year after, and probably the year after that, Bogdanović will be the better player, and that's really hard to project too much further than that into the future. So I think that's a pretty good win for you. I don't see Early playing a huge role next year, whereas Bogdanović could easily be that top 120 sort of player. As he's more comfortable in the NBA, we saw that down the stretch as he got better in that stretch run for the season. So I think the Bogdanović is a real sleeper for this team. I think there's a lot of talent there, and once he gets. Once he gets more of a solid role, which I'm hoping he gets next season, and similar to what he did in that last month, I reckon we get some good value for him, and I think 12-team leagues definitely need to be on the lookout for him. And as I said, the Dynasty guys, the next 2 to 3 seasons, there's definitely some talent there for Bojan Bogdanović. The other guys listed as shooting guard on this team, Sergei Karasev, he's a second-year player, played for Cleveland the year before. Now, he suffered a pretty severe knee injury. I don't think we're going to have much of an impact from him next season. He showed signs a little bit at times. I don't think he's a great player, though. He was a first-round draft pick in 2013, and his numbers look okay. He played 17 minutes a game, 4.6 points. But like a lot of these other players, he doesn't do much else. 2 rebounds, 1.5 assists, 40 and 76 is his percentages. Not all that ideal. The 331st ranked player in head-to-head per game. A guy who surprised at times, especially when he got his first start, was Markell Brown, a second-round rookie. He had some massive games, but it was because he'd go in there and play huge minutes. He'd get good points, big double-doubles, blocking shots like nobody's business, but that slowed down significantly. And we look at his numbers, the thing that stands out is he had 0.3 blocks a game, and then you go, 0.3 blocks, what the hell is that, Josh? That's nothing. But it's 0.3 blocks for a shooting guard in 17 minutes. If he played 30 minutes, we're talking a 0.7 to 0.8 block type of guy, as a shooting guard, and that's relevant. But I don't think he's going to get minutes over Bogdanovich. He could be the primary backup, but he's got Jared Jack there as well. I think the Markell Brown, his future is brighter than what Sergei Karasev's is, and if I'm picking between one of those two guys in a dynasty league, I'm taking Markell Brown. But after that initial explosion when he got the starting nod for a time in early 2015, he definitely tailed off. But we see it post All-Star, 262nd is his rank. That's pretty decent. I say decent, but we're talking deep leagues here. 20 team leagues, I would think he's got a place in those sort of formats. And obviously deep dynasty, there's a little bit of something there for him. Not a huge amount though. Joe Johnson's a guy who's playing most of his basketball now as the small forward. His overall numbers look pretty good. 67th in head to head, 54th in roto, which is obviously good, but he played 80 games, so it skews it a bit. Head-to-head per game, 105th, and down the stretch, he just wasn't that good. 143rd post-All-Star break. The numbers are okay. 14.5 points, 1.5 threes, you know, say 5 assists, 3.5, so 5 rebounds, 3.5 assists, 44 and 80. This is obviously not peak Joe Johnson. It's obviously not terrible Joe Johnson. He's older. He's on a very, very big contract. He's only got 1 year left, though, which is $25 million, admittedly, but only one season left. I don't see that any reason that he's going to lose minutes. There's no one to take his minutes for a start. So I think that we see him at around that 90 to 95 to 105 sort of head-to-head range next season, and that's where you should be taking him. There's no upside, but there's steadiness. I don't think there's much of a downside in Joe Johnson. You'll get times when he's a top 70 guy. You'll get times when he's a top 140 guy. But overall, his value is that 10th, 11th sort of round. And I don't see the, you know, we might get a slight decrease in his numbers, but he'll be relatively steady still. He's still a pretty good player. He's not washed up by any stretch. He's not worth $25 million, but he's not washed up yet. So if you own Joe Johnson in a dynasty league, you know, expect some solid production for the next 1 to 2 seasons, but I imagine that will start to decrease soon. Not that anybody's going to give you great value for him, though. Moving forward, we all understand where Joe Johnson is placed. Alan Anderson's an okay player. That's the best way of putting it for him. He played 24 minutes in 74 games. Not much. The one triple's nice. 7.3 points, 3 rebounds, 44 and 81 is his percentages. 0.8 steals. That's nothing that really gets us too excited. He's an okay roto guy, 189th for the season, head-to-head 245, improved it a little bit down the stretch at 193, but it's nothing really to get too excited about. The future there, Anderson and Bogdanovich are a similar age. Bogdanovich is going to be the better player than what Anderson is, so I think that you'd hope that they'd want to run Bogdanovich out there than they ran Anderson. That was another confusing move that Lionel Hollander made, just chopping and changing those guys. I think Bogdanovich is obviously the player that I want there over Alan Anderson, but deep leagues, you're going to get consistent sort of 16 to 18 team league value from Alan Anderson, and that's about it. He's never going to get much better than this, and he's, even if given a big opportunity, he's not going to all of a sudden become a top 100 player, where Bogdanovich, I think, does have that potential to become a top 100 player. Earl Clark signed on late for this team. He played 10 games. Nothing really to talk about with him. He was a guy who had a little bit of success for the Lakers a couple of years back. He is signed for next season, so he's going to be there providing a little bit of depth. 377th in the last month of the season. I don't think there's much of a future for Earl Clark. He can hit a three. He can block a shot. So there's something there, but we're talking, has to be the deepest of deep fantasy leagues for Earl Clark to have really much of an impact, unless we see injuries start striking him down, like like Alan Anderson or Bogdanovich or Joe Johnson or someone like that that forces him into more of a starring. And again, I use that term pretty loosely, in more of a starring role. Thad Young, a guy who was a small forward for a big chunk of his career, now more playing the four, came across in the deal for Kevin Garnett. We don't know what Thad Young is going to do next season. He's got an early termination option. If he doesn't decide to exercise that early termination option, he's going to be played $10 million for next season. He was a disappointment in Minnesota, and didn't really turn it on that much in Brooklyn. And again, a lot of it was to do with the way that Lionel Hollins managed him, playing him off the bench, limiting his minutes. I don't know why. For Roto Leagues, he was really solid. The 57th ranked player for Rotisserie Leagues. He played 76 games, 14 points, half a three, 5 rebounds, 1.6 steals, which is really where his real strength lies. A power forward guy who gets a lot of steals. He was the third guy in steals in the 2013-14 season. Dropped off a little bit, but he led the team in steals with 1.6. He shot 47% from the field, 66% from the line. That's one of his main issues. If he is back with the team, you'd imagine the same sort of numbers. 103rd in per game head-to-head value. I would say that if you wanted to take him, you're going to have to take him a bit earlier than pick 100. I would expect a little bit of a bounce back for him, assuming that Lionel Hollins begins to use him correctly. But I would look for a little bit of a bounce back from Thad Young, probably into the top 80 to top 75 in per game value. Didn't really light things up, though, down the stretch with a last month ranking of 131. I do think he bounces back, and you might be able to get him at a little bit of a discount, but to pick him, I don't think you're going to ever have a chance to pick him outside the top 100 next season. The other big men on this roster, well, there's only a couple of guys who are even at the risk of coming out of contract, and that's Mirza Teletovic, who's a restricted free agent. You would think that they're going to tender him or give him the qualifying offer after he missed a big chunk of last season with a blood clot. Came back in the playoffs. I thought he was in a really, really good position to bust out. It didn't happen, you know, even before the injury. He just was sort of up and down. He'd have games where he'd put up big numbers, and then he'd have games where he'd do not much. 243rd for head-to-head leagues, meaning that some leagues definitely need to pay attention to him. He's a bomber, basically. 1.6 triples in 22 minutes, 5 rebounds, 8.5 points, but a 38% shooter, 32 from deep. We're talking a guy who took 8 field goal attempts a game, and 4.8 of those were from 3. So basically that's his value, and he gets rebounds. He doesn't do much in terms of shot blocking. His field goal percentage is horrific for a power forward. 72 as a free throw percentage is pretty good amongst power forwards, but he's a guy that you stream in at the end of your draft or off free agency, you know, waivers, to give you 3-pointers. Does he get more than 22 minutes a game? With Thad Young there, I think it's pretty unlikely. I reckon, yeah, assuming Young is back, we'll see Teletovic play that 22-minute role off the bench and become a guy who can shoot for this team. There aren't a huge amount of guys on this team, especially in the big men, guys that can take it out deep. He's their stretch four option, assuming they bring him back and match any offers he gets in restricted free agency. Corey Jefferson, like Markel Brown, was a second-round draft choice last season, and I really liked what he could do. He only played 11 minutes a game, 3.7 points, 2.9 rebounds, 0.4 blocks, 45% from the field. That's not all that good, but in 10 minutes, it actually is pretty good. We look at his per 36 numbers, 12.4, 9.8 rebounds, 1.5 blocks. They're some pretty decent numbers. I think the Corey Jefferson showed that he can play in the league. 408th in head-to-head per game, but improved it to 356 post-All-Star break. The problem is the minutes crunch there. We've got Brook Lopez, we've got Mason Plumlee, we've got Mirza Teletovic, we've got Thaddeus Young. There's a few other names there. Now, if one of these guys goes, like Thad Young, like Teletovic, we could see Jefferson pushed into a bigger role, and he is a guy who can get rebounds, assuming he gets minutes. So he's someone to keep an eye on in Dynasty Leagues. Definitely you won't have to pay hardly anything to get him, but he's someone that you can have a crack at, I would say. That's the best way of putting it. Only a couple more players to look at for the Nets. I'm going to look at Brook Lopez, who was their most successful fantasy player for the season. After numerous injury concerns, you know, definitely there's a huge right to be concerned with Brook Lopez. He fell down draft boards. He was drafted outside the top 50, but he stormed home. For the season, he was the 30th ranked player in head-to-head leagues, 42nd in Roto leagues, 34th in per-game head-to-head value, but what really stands out is his play in the last 2 months. The 16th-ranked player after the All-Star break, and the last month of the season, Brook Lopez was the 7th-highest-ranked player in head-to-head leagues. He was just putting up numbers like they were going out of fashion. In that last month, he averaged 22.5 points, 9.2 rebounds, 2.2 blocks, 58 and 84. And if he was to put up those numbers moving forward, there's no doubt that that's top 20 talent there. That is crazy good numbers. The thing that's most impressive is the fact that he's been known as someone who's not been able to grab rebounds. But for extended periods of the season, he grabbed big numbers. The last 3 months of the season, 8 rebounds a game and 19 points with 2 blocks. If we could have a guarantee that Brook Lopez is going to remain healthy, which is a big if, he is clearly a top 20 player. I don't think you take him in the top 20 in drafts because of that injury risk. And he was relatively healthy this season, playing 72 games. But there is still a risk with Brook Lopez. I would be happy taking him in the 30s, or probably, I don't think you're going to get him in the 40s. But we know what he can do. Look at these numbers. He did start thriving once Lionel Hollins got his head out of his ass and decided that he was going to go, you know what, Lopez is a better player than Mason Plumlee. We need to start him and play him minutes. Amazingly, the Nets started going on a run. Lopez started putting up big minutes and the team started playing more entertaining, more attractive brand of basketball and got themselves into the playoffs, which was key for them because otherwise they would have gone into the lottery and the Hawks would have got their lottery pick. One of the many issues I had with Lionel Hollins was the way that he treated Brook Lopez, but we saw down the stretch how good an offensive player Lopez can be. Improved his rebounding astronomically. His block numbers are great, and percentage is just fantastic. He was a thrill to watch down the stretch. It's going to be a real interesting one because if we talk about what he can actually do, he's a top 20 player, but the injury risk does push him back. I reckon I'd be happy taking him at around pick 30, maybe 25. That's a little bit risky. But you know the payoff is going to be huge with him. The other guy we've got to talk about is Mason Plumlee, the player that started in place of Brook Lopez for a big chunk of the season, and he was a disappointment. 21 minutes a game, 8.7 points, 6.2 rebounds, 0.8 steals, 0.8 blocks, 57 is his field goal percentage, 50 is his free throw percentage, so there's a big downfall there with him. And he just doesn't strike me as a great player. In head-to-head leagues for the season, he did play the 82 games. He was a 94th-ranked player. But if we look at per game, that's 162. Roto, 188. And down the stretch, he was abominable, with Lopez getting really, really hot. 272 in this portion of the season after the All-Star break for Mason Plumlee. And we had a lot of questions come in about Plumlee and about Lopez coming through on Twitter. So we had Nicky Tons 14, Nick Anthony. Can the Lopez-Plumlee frontline ever coexist, i.e. floor spacing fantasy implications? No, I don't think they can play together. Lopez is a good shooter, but he's not a good floor spacer. Plumlee is not a good shooter, not a good offensive player at all. I don't think that they necessarily work well together. Van Burf asks, odds that Plumlee either gets traded elsewhere or gets a bigger role if Lopez goes elsewhere? The ceiling if he gets a bigger role? Well, if he does get a bigger role, if Lopez goes elsewhere, he does have a high ceiling, but it's points, it's blocks, it's rebounds, and it's field goal percentage. And you'll get big amounts. We saw when he started, when Lopez was injured, he was able to put up big rebound numbers. I just don't think he's that good a player. I don't think he deserves minutes over Lopez. Barry Baker also asked me a question. Do you think Plumlee will be at the Nets next year? I would, if you had asked me 3-4 months ago, I would have said definitely. I'm not that convinced that he remains in Brooklyn next season. He could be packaged off, like we heard with that Darren Williams deal, as a sweetener to get rid of him. I don't think he's a good player, Mason Plumlee. I think he's an okay player. I don't think he's a great player. But if he gets a starting job somewhere, and I don't know where that's going to be apart from Brooklyn, if Lopez happens to go, he does have value where you'd want to look at taking him inside the top 60, no doubt, and he becomes one of those free throw punt players, along with the likes of Drummond and Howard and Noel and Derek Favors and Gobert to a degree as well. He fits into that area, but his points, his rebounds, his field goal percentage, and he blocks some shots as well. Probably not as good a shot blocker as what Brook Lopez is, but he still gives you an okay amount of blocks. If he gets opportunity, he can be big, but I just don't think he's overall that good a player for teams to be investing a lot in him or putting a lot of time into him because his offensive game is quite limited and he's not necessarily a defensive game changer. He might get the rebounds, but he's not a defensive game changer as such. I'm not all that high on Plumlee. I think in dynasty leagues, you're going to get a better return from him than per game 162. It might not be for a season or two, but I think that over the course of the next couple of years, he becomes a top 100 player. I just don't think he's ever going to cement himself as a top 50 player. I'm not all that convinced that he is that good. It's just, he's too limited offensively. I think that's what holds him back. Now, we know there are guys that can make a living being offensively limited, like Tyson Chandler, but Plumlee is just a guy who does struggle down the stretch, just 5 points a game in 17 minutes in that last month. Then the 5 rebounds is good. And if we look at his numbers brought out over the course of the season to per 36, they're good. 14.8 points, 10.6 rebounds, 1.3 steals, 1.3 blocks, 57 and 50 is his percentages. Obviously, they stay the same. But that's not superb. It's not awesome. He's not getting 22 points and 15 rebounds or something like that. He's just okay, I think, is the best way of putting him. So I don't think I'd be drafting him in any 10-team leagues next year, probably not 12-team leagues, 14-team leagues maybe, and Dynasty, I'm not putting as high a premium on him as what some others may do. If he does get traded, it all depends on the situation, because if he gets big minutes, you're going to get big numbers, but I just don't think he's a player who really demands that sort of playing time or anything along those lines. Jerome Jordan is the third center there. He played some minutes at times. He's not really a great player, though. 9 minutes a game, 3 points, 2.5 rebounds. We don't need to really talk too much about him. As a 349th ranked player in per game value, I don't see we're going to see much of an improvement from Jerome Jordan going forward. That does it for today's Brooklyn Nets season in review podcast. Next up is going to be the Boston Celtics, so feel free to send me any questions you have about the Celtics and their fantasy season that was just had, and any questions moving forward. Don't forget to check out the YouTube channel and subscribe there, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. You know how to follow me in all those areas, and leave us a review on iTunes. That is always fantastic when you guys do that, and I do appreciate it immensely. Thanks so much for listening, everyone. See ya.